Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. It's the Ailish Hour. Aaron Schatz. He invented DVOA. Going to learn a little bit about that. Lots of numbers. As a non-numbers person, we're going to explore. That would be a very Blake spreadsheets type conversation. I'm going to pretend that I'm Blake in that one. And then we're going to have Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic, at 9:30. Even though the Blue Jays game was canceled last night, even though they're not playing tonight, maybe that brings a nice rejuvenated energy to the fans. You know, two nights of not watching the Blue Jays, maybe it's a good time for a break for them. That's at the 9:30 slot. But before we get into our guests, Serena Williams. She played her last ever game in Toronto last night at the National Bank Open. Lost in straight sets. Obviously, we've talked about this for 2 days. The GOAT, the greatest of all time. She announces that she's going to be retiring after the U.S. Open, which is surprisingly in 2 weeks. That snuck up on us. And we've been kind of celebrating her career over the last few days. And I'm sure we will continue with that. Retirement isn't the word she wants to use. It's evolving to the next part of her chapter. But she is walking away from the game, and that will be the last time that you'll see her in Toronto. I know it was a packed house. A lot of people got tickets last minute to see her play. Billie Jean King, who is one of the obviously most influential athletes of the 21st century, a legend, an advocate, she got a chance to say some words on Serena's career right before her final match here in Toronto.
I think that we've been very blessed to have Serena Williams in our sport. Great athlete. A lot of people think she's the GOAT, and I think every generation gets better. So right now, she's the GOAT. I love reading about her and listening to her about how she's evolving. Serena's transcended our sport, gone way beyond the boundaries of just being an athlete. Because of her stature, using tennis as a platform, way beyond just the sport, and giving back and also making it better for women, particularly women of color. It's just the beginning for Serena. So, Serena, if you're listening, go for it. Keep evolving. You're the best. So, good luck. God bless you.
And Serena's had some pretty incredible times in Toronto. She's a three-time champion here. She started last night's match with an ace, fittingly, with that powerful serve. She ends up falling a bit short. You can tell that injury has played a little bit of a role in the last 12 months. Started to slow down a little bit last night. She had some thoughts on her memories in Toronto with her final interview with Carly Agro.
You know, I've always had some amazing times here, you know, both on and off the court. I'll be coming back just as a visitor to the city. But it's been remarkable. You know, I've had some really amazing matches out here and some really cool wins and a crazy match against you a few years ago. that was pretty intense. But anyways, it is what it is. But I was really happy to be out here today, and play in front of you guys. And thanks for the support.
Yeah. Serena, it's going to be tough to watch tennis without Serena moving forward. Yeah, she, you know, Billie Jean King mentions there's a GOAT in every generation, and maybe we're seeing a little bit of that coming through here at the National Bank Open. But to see Serena have her last ever appearance in front of a Toronto crowd, Toronto did it right. You know, they had signs, they came out in full force. It was great to see. Bianca then played afterwards, someone who has beaten Serena on this exact court. A little bit of a full circle moment. We had her on the show 2 days ago. She obviously has quite the history and memories of Serena Williams. And Serena got a chance to say her final goodbye to Toronto, which she said she's not good at goodbyes, but it was emotional to say the least.
You know, I don't know. I just love the... Thank you. It's just been so memorable, you know. Like I said in my article, I'm terrible at goodbyes, but goodbye. Toronto!
Goodbye, Toronto. Goodbye, Serena, in terms of your on-court experiences here. We will certainly see you once again as a fan and can't wait to see what she does in the next evolution of her career. But she's not done yet. A couple more tournaments down the road. So a goodbye to her, but a hello to our next guest, Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders creator of DVOA, ESPN NFL analyst. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, guys. Hello.
It's so great to have you. I know we've never spoke before, but a big fan of the work. And I was doing some research last night. I saw that you were once a radio DJ. Is that right?
That is correct. That was my first job out of college on WKRO in Daytona Beach, Florida.
Wow. What was your time slot for that?
I did 7 to midnight, and then I did 10 to 2.
Wow. So 7 to midnight, you're probably playing some club bangers for the Florida crowd. Is that right?
Oh, no, man. Loud rock music.
Wow.
It was an alternative rock station. That was back when the Florida sound was really big. 7 Mary 3 and Mighty Joe Plum and Matchbox 20 came out of Orlando around that time.
Oh, that's
fun. So, yeah.
I love a Matchbox 20. I like the variety. I actually totally expected Florida to be more of like, you know, clubby scene, but I like that you're giving me a little more perspective. If I had to play you in with a song, which we should have asked you in advance, what would that be?
Oh, of course, it's Shots.
Okay, that's what I thought. I should have done that.
That's my theme song. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
All right. Well, on his way out, guys, we got to get Shots ready, okay? Not actually to drink, but, you know, it's only 9 a.m. up here, but maybe at 11. Okay, so Aaron's joining us here. I'm going to be honest. I was an athlete. I still am kind of an athlete. Growing up, I was never a numbers girl. I'm either scoring or I'm on the bench. Okay, so DVOA for dummies. I know it's not always about offense, but if you're listening and you're not a stats person like me, give me like the DVOA for dummies lesson.
Okay, measures success on every play based on the down and distance, mm-hmm. adjusted for situation and opponent with a league average baseline.
Seems easy enough. I mean, I went to a pretty good school in college, and I think I get the grasp of it. And I know that it's been something that you've seen some teams start to adopt specifically over the last little while. What does that mean to you to see your work now becoming something that's used to evaluate players?
Oh, it's great fun. It's a trip, honestly, to see teams reference my stats mm-hmm. when they talk about players or they talk about their own situations. Although I will admit, when I started doing this, and I've been doing this now for 20 years, believe it or not, the original football analytics site we launched in 2003, and my goal was always to revolutionize the way football was covered more than to revolutionize the way football was played. I was always more disappointed with the announcers than I was with the coaches, so I love the influence that we've had on coaches and general managers, but I also love the influence we've had, not as much on commentators, but beat writers. Beat mm-hmm. writers are so much smarter now than they were 20 years ago because of analytics.
Is there a type of progression that this stat can do? Is there more that you're, you know, digging into, and will there be growth in it, or have you just, like, you've nailed it down, this is it?
I mean, I think I've nailed this one down. We're always looking to improve it to get it to be more predictive for the future. But where the development is coming in the world of football analytics is all through the next-gen stats. That's the stats that the teams mm-hmm. get from the chips and the pads that shows, you know, the actual movement of players on the field. It is just a fire hose of information that is coming at every team's analytics department, and there is so much that you can learn from the actual movement of the players because it allows you to measure all those things that were always thought to be not measurable, like blocking and cornerback coverage. So, like, that's where the growth is.
So we'll get into a little bit more about how this is going to affect this upcoming season and where you're seeing this, maybe give you some preseason initiation of who you might be, you know, tuning into more this year. But I want to ask about the Football Outsiders Almanac. I know it's out. It's something you can find online. What are we seeing, and how does that help, you know, NFL fans?
So it's a big book. It's 550 pages. This is our preseason annual that we do every year. There's a chapter on each team that talks about where it was last year and where it's going for this year, with a lot of statistics, breakdowns of every unit, breakdowns of all the fantasy players, you know, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. There's also a section on college football with a rundown of the top 50 teams, fantasy projections, and a lot of just really good knowledge for anybody who wants to be a smarter fan, wants to win their fantasy league, or just wants to be better betting. You go to Amazon and you can search for Football Outsiders Almanac 2022, or go to our site to get the electronic version. You have to be a subscriber mm-hmm. to FO Plus. And you can go to our site, footballoutsiders.com/subscribe, and learn about all the other stuff that you get with FO Plus. You don't just get the book. You also get our preseason fantasy tool and our in-season fantasy research tools and picks against the spread and a number of other things.
Okay, well, it honestly sounds incredible, especially for me who's got fantasy football drafts around the corner. I'm always eager to learn more and become a smarter NFL fan. So everyone listening, take a look at that. Aaron Schatz, you can also, your Twitter page will probably have some links for that as well. Okay, so DVOA, in your Football Outsiders work and maybe in the Almanac, you got the Saints as a top defensive DVOA in 2022. Is it by a wide margin, and what are the key contributors to this?
No, it's that. So those are our projections for this year, mm-hmm. and projections are a range of possibilities. So that's like the middle of the range of possibilities. And here's the thing about football. Offense is more consistent from year to year and easier to predict from year to year than defense is, mostly because of quarterbacks. And therefore, the like range of possibilities for defense is much less. So the defenses are much more like packed together in their projections than the offenses are. So we do have the Saints number one, but not by a lot. But mm-hmm. they've been a top defense for a couple of years now. Look at what they've done to Tampa Bay. Like, they've shut Brady down when they've played Tampa Bay. There is a lot of talent. Cameron Jordan, Marshawn Lattimore, Demario Davis. There's a lot of talent on that Saints defense that people don't talk about very much. The big question about them is Dennis Allen is now the head coach. Will he be able to coordinate that defense to the same level now that he also has head coach responsibilities?
I wonder how you value new coaches, new systems in your rankings. Is it something that you look at the next couple weeks of preseason football at all? I know these rankings are already done. Is it adjustable throughout what you see over the next couple weeks?
No, the only thing that's going to matter over the next couple weeks is injuries. I mean, like, we'll change. We'll mm-hmm. do a new set of preseason projections that will incorporate injuries, but we don't really learn a lot from the preseason. It's tough, you know, when new coaches come aboard, you don't really have any kind of a track record on them for the most part to say, oh, this is going to be an improvement, this is going to be a decline, this coach is good, this coach is bad. What we do know is that overall, all other things being equal, learning a new system under a new coach, you usually take a little bit of a step backwards. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times those are bad teams. So that step backwards is balanced by the fact that bad teams generally take a step forward. So, you know, the things even out. But overall, in general, you lose a little bit when you're learning a new system. Obviously, there are exceptions. There are teams that take a huge step forward once they've learned a new system. But it's hard to predict what that'll be.
Mm-hmm. Who's a bad team that took a step forward in your mind?
For this year, I mean, first of all, teams regress towards the mean in general. You know, in general, good teams get a little worse. Bad teams get a little better. You know, part of that is just losing free agents, right? Bad teams tend to lose more free agents. Good teams lose more free agents. Bad teams will sign them to improve their talent. Bad teams draft higher. They get better rookies. I think a team that took a big step forward this year that was bad last year is Denver, obviously, because of Russell Wilson now being mm-hmm. their quarterback. Denver is an interesting team because their defense was a statistical mirage last year, caused by the fact that their offense played at a ridiculously slow pace, which meant they didn't allow a lot of points because their defense wasn't on the field as much because their offense was so slow. But it wasn't like their defense was really that good. But their offense is going to take a big step forward. That's what Russell Wilson is quarterback. So the team as a whole should take a step forward.
Okay, other flip side of that, a team that was, you know, a good competitor or a better team that took some steps backwards.
Well, first of all, the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, their quarterback situation without Wilson is a mess. Second, we are not high this year on the Arizona Cardinals. It's not just the offensive decline that they've had over the last couple of years in the second half of the season, but their defense, there are a number of statistical indicators that suggest that their defense will get worse. And then you look at the talent on the defense. They have been a top 10 defense the last couple of years by our numbers. You look at the talent on that defense and you scratch your head. How on earth did they have that happen? It was a great coaching job. The talent on that defense just does not fit what you think of as a top 10 defense. So between that and the statistical indicators, we think their defense is going to really decline, and we don't see their offense particularly improving, especially when they don't have DeAndre Hopkins for the first six games. So we see Arizona as a team that's going to fall off this year.
Where do you see the Bills in all this? Obviously, we're up here in Toronto, right over the border from Bills. A lot of people listening, Bills fans. I'm careful with their answer. But are they a type of team that you do see as a Super Bowl favorite, which they're currently given?
Oh, yeah. They are the Super Bowl favorites, absolutely. I will say our simulations tend to be very conservative, right? So we tend to project teams closer to 500 than Vegas does. And this year's projections were even more conservative than usual. So, like, the last few years we've been doing this, the Bills are the weakest team of the teams that have been our Super Bowl favorite going into each season. But they are the strongest team of the teams this year. They are the Super Bowl favorite this year. They're well-rounded, and they have a lot of depth. Like, I mean, not quarterback, but other positions, they could withstand some injuries, which most teams you can't really say that about.
Do you take into account schedule in any of these predictions? Who's got a favorable matchups? Who's got tougher starts when you're trying to do these predictions?
Yes, absolutely. Now, it's harder to predict than you think because we don't necessarily know which teams are going to take a big step forward or backward. But, like, the NFC East all has really easy schedules. Philadelphia has the easiest schedule in the league. The AFC North has harder schedules. If Deshaun Watson is only suspended for six games, then the Cincinnati Bengals have the hardest schedule in the league. If Watson is suspended for the entire season, then the Arizona Cardinals have the hardest schedule in the league.
Wow. A lot of factors. Obviously, a lot of question marks moving forward. And we don't know the answers to those questions yet. But here's a pondering question that I often think about is, In this conversation that we usually have around football, we're talking about offense is sexy, right? Who's scoring, who's getting touchdowns. But my question is, does defense still win championships in this area?
No, honestly. Okay, first of all, the best thing to win a championship is a balanced team. Mm-hmm. The best thing is to be the best team overall. And the best thing is to have a good offense and a good defense. But the fact is, offense, the best offense, is generally going to be stronger than the best defense. And in the playoffs, a lot of times top offenses win out over top defenses. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes top defenses win out over top offenses. But it's also easier to build your team around offense because offense is more predictable. If you build your team around a top quarterback and you have a top offense every year, one year you will randomly luck into having a good defense and then you'll win a championship. That's what happened with the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning, right? Their defense went up and down and up and down every year, but their offense was always good. So once they finally had a good defense, they won a championship.
And who's got that top offense this year, in your opinion?
We have Tampa Bay with the number one offense. I know, the asterisk on that is that Tom Brady is 45 years old.
But that never stops him.
Yeah, nobody ever lost money betting on Tom Brady, so we're going to bet on him again. Kansas City is number two and Buffalo number three.
Yeah, that seems pretty on par with what we're thinking as well without all the stats. Okay, before I let you go, we've been asking our guests here on the Fan Morning Show to rank the top five quarterbacks in the league. So far, I had Jamie Erdl on. She gave some good answers, but I want to know what you have in your top five quarterbacks.
Okay. This would be my top five for this year, not necessarily for last year.
This year, coming into this season.
I still think Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. He is the most likely to be the best quarterback every year. Mm-hmm. I would put Aaron Rodgers second and Tom Brady third. Justin Herbert fourth. And I think Dak Prescott fifth, but you can talk me into Josh Allen.
Whoa.
Here's the problem with Allen. Allen is very inconsistent from game to game. Mm-hmm. But that's also a good thing about Allen. Because when Allen, right, when he hits the highs are very high. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. We had this argument on our live stream, which we do Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. People can check out footballoutsiders.com for more information about that. We had this argument about our live stream between Herbert and Allen. And what we ended up with was, we would rather have Justin Herbert in the regular season when you want consistency. We would rather have Josh Allen in the playoffs, because if he has a bad game, you're out. But if he has one of those good games, if he has two or three of those good games in a row, you're going to win a championship. So the inconsistency of Allen is actually a good thing in the playoffs when you need those great games.
It's also tough if you're a Bills fan, the inconsistency. So I get why he's a little lower on your list, but hopefully we can still invite you back on the show with all the Bills fans that are listening. We had actually Jamie didn't have Brady in her rankings, and it caused quite the stir. So at least you have him, because I do agree. I think he's still a top five, unfortunately.
Still on the top.
He's still up there.
The dude never stops. Never stops. It's unbelievable.
Aaron, I really appreciate you joining us today. Not sure if we have shots ready to play you out with, but oh, we do. Let's get it. There we go. Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders. Check that out. Look at his Twitter page. Pre-order or order the Football Almanac. And we will definitely talk to you soon down the road. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thank you so much. Aaron Schatz. Take a look at his work. It is absolutely incredible. Very high knowledge level on that guy. It is not surface level information. It is deep dive. But I think he gave a really good DVOA for dummies. If you're learning, you're just stepping your toe into it. He's a great guy to follow. He's got live streams. I watched their live stream Tuesday. And they bounce around narratives as well, not just all the numbers, but also, as he mentioned, really great for fantasy football season coming around the corner. You want to know the projections on people you're going to draft? Bingo. There you go. You want to get a better sense of who to bet for? That's one thing I didn't ask him. We'll have to get him back on is... good long shots for Super Bowl odds, for Super Bowl odds, players that might impress in terms of this season. I guess we're going to have to get them back in so our new bettors here can make some money. As I said, football season's ramping up here. We have two games tonight, obviously preseason, but nonetheless, football on your screen. No Jays as well, so you don't even have to do the double screen. You don't have to even pretend to want to watch the Jays, okay? Giants and Patriots, 7 p.m. tonight. I think naturally everyone's interested in the Patriots' new look offense. The thing about preseason football is you never know who's going to play. So there's no guarantee that the first unit plays. They've had some early struggles in camp by reports. A year ago they had their first... Three preseason games instead of four, as they did play their starters in the opener. But we're not sure about tonight. Bill Belichick, you know, he likes to keep things up his sleeve. You have to tune in to see. On the Giants side, they got a new coach, Brian Daboll. He sounds like he's going to play all of his healthy players tonight. So a very intriguing matchup. Titans and Ravens also at 7:30. So maybe there's your double screen between the two of them. But football is happening tonight. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Preseason football. I mean, if you're looking for something new to bet on, if you've been losing money on the Blue Jays, tonight can be a fun one for you. We're going to talk more Blue Jays after the break with Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic. She did not have to watch any Blue Jays last night with rain delay. And the other side of that was she wasn't even going to be watching any Blue Jays. She tweeted out that she's at Serena's final match in Toronto. Don't bug her. Don't add her about Blue Jay stuff. Didn't even need to be a cramming session this morning for her radio hit, because nothing to talk about. But there's lots to talk about with the Blue Jays, because they're in a real tough spot right now. Maybe this 2-day break is going to invigorate them. maybe the inevitable is that we come back tomorrow and it's tough times. I'm hoping that that's not the case. Kayla McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic. That's next.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, it's the Eilish Hour. Take a look at our podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts, all 4 hours of it. Obviously, last night, the Blue Jays had a rain delay that then continued and continued and continued, and then the game was inevitably postponed. So, got us thinking, JD and I, what are the worst delays to have? Obviously, airport, big one. Delay in traffic, big one. Delay in your food being delivered, huge one. A delay in bringing your guest on the air. Hopefully not as bad. Kayla McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic. Good morning, Kaylin.
Good morning.
Hey, so last night you were like, everybody shut up. Don't mention me on Twitter because I'm going to see Serena Williams in her final game in Toronto. I don't want to know about the Blue Jays. Well, lucky for you, they didn't play. But you got to see Serena in, sadly, the last time we'll see her in Toronto. How was that last night?
It was great. Yeah, I mean, it kind of worked out that the Blue Jays just ended up not playing, so I didn't necessarily have to worry about keeping one eye on that game. But, yeah, it was great to see her, and you kind of had this feeling that it – well, the way I wanted to go was, like, what if – I don't want to regret not going if it is her last match, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I bought tickets, got good seats, and it was great to see her. I mean, I wish the match went a little longer – so that she could have stayed on court even longer. The crowd was really good. Everyone was rooting for her. And credit to Bencic, because it must have been really hard to play in that scenario, because obviously she wants to win, but no one's cheering for her. And I think she knew, but she handled it really well, obviously playing a good match. And then afterward, just kind of stepping aside and letting Serena have the mic. So it was great to be there, and I'm excited to watch Serena, I guess, play in the U.S. Open, too.
Yeah, sadly, that seems like it's the last one that she's going to play. But as a journalist yourself, you know, you've covered, obviously, the sport for a long time, and regardless of which sport you are covering, I feel like you know Serena as one of the most inspirational athletes of all time, transcends, you know, which sport you watch, what gender you are. How do you put that into words of just what she means to the growth of the game?
Yeah, I mean, she's changed the sport of tennis, especially on the women's side, but just overall. I mean, what her and her sister Venus did for the game, to grow it, to just change how women could play. The style you see so many women on the court play now, this big hitting, big serving style, is the Williams sisters. Like, they established that, and that's kind of how woman play now. And so it's great to see, and she's just so inspirational. I've had the chance to see her a few times and watched her so much over the years, and I went through so many phases where she was my favorite player, and then I liked other people, but I always kind of came back to Serena. So that's why I kind of wanted to see her again. But yeah, I know it's great. It is hard to put into words everything that she's done, because you almost like take her for granted. It's like the entire time, basically, that I've been watching tennis since I was a little girl, Serena's been playing. And so it's like she is tennis to me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of not sure that I've even wrapped my mind around her not playing anymore, because she's just always been there, and she's always been like a focal point in tennis. She's just one of the best ever, and she's done it for so long. And I think that she made it seem so normal that I feel like you kind of forget how extraordinary she was and what she was able to do.
You're right. She was just this constant, whether she was winning a tournament, she was always a competitor, someone you want to tune into. Certainly for myself, growing up, not being the biggest tennis fan, but maybe a casual tennis fan, you'd want to tune in to watch Serena Williams. So it's going to be an interesting change of the guard, and to see, you know, who fills that role. And maybe one of the people that could is Bianca. And I know she played after. Did you get a chance to watch her?
Yep, I awesome. Stuck around for her match, which was a very entertaining match as well. Both those players definitely are great movers around the court, and so there was a lot of back and forth rallies, a lot of creative shot making, and it went three, which is always kind of a bonus. You feel like you get your money's worth when you get a three setter, especially on the night session. So it was great to see her come back, and hopefully she goes on a run. She looked really good to me. I mean, I know she's coming back from a lot of time off and a lot of injuries, but she looked really good out there on court. So hopefully she goes on a nice run, because that would be cool for the Toronto crowd.
Oh, big time. I got to see her Tuesday when she returned to action, which was, you know, a little bit of a nail biter at first, but she got the win last night. She got the win stringing them together. She plays today. Yes, okay, obviously we'll have lots of tennis coverage. So you're not on here for tennis coverage, but I like that you're giving me some. Okay, last one on Serena. Where does she rank in the greatest athletes you've got to see live?
Oh, she's got to be, like, number one, I think. Wow. I mean, I guess I've seen a lot of great baseball players.
You get to see Raimel Tapia all the time.
If that's true. He's up there, too. He's Mr. Clutch. But I think that I've seen Nadal as well. I mean, I know I've seen Nadal, so I would put him up there. Mm-hmm. But I don't really want to, like, say who's one or two. I'd be like, 1A, 1B. I've seen Djokovic. I don't think I've ever seen Federer, because I think the times that I covered the Rogers Cup, when it was called the Rogers Cup, he just wasn't there or something. I think that the couple times it was the men here, he wasn't able to come. And he's obviously been winding down too. And that's coming as well. I mean, we've been so spoiled as tennis fans the last, like, more than a decade of watching these athletes who are literally, like, changing the sport or change the sport. Federer being in that group, Nadal being in that group as well. And Nadal's obviously still playing. Federer hasn't retired yet, but he's up there in age. He hasn't played in a long time. So you have to think that is eventually coming soon, especially with Serena deciding the ends for her. I feel like maybe it would, I don't know that it would push other people, but it kind of brings it to the forefront where I'm like, okay, Federer's probably coming up soon at some point. That's going to happen as well. So
it is tough to, because I got that narrative as well that, okay, we might see two of the greatest athletes and greatest tennis players of all time retiring the same year, but I don't want that to happen. So I don't want to put that in the universe, but it does seem like kind of the narrative that we're getting to. Okay. So Blue Jays. You got to not have to watch them last night, not today either, with the rain delay. So does that change the rotation at all? You get this extra added off day. Are you someone that would rejig that, or you just continue with who was supposed to start, which is Berríos for Friday?
Yeah, I think they've announced that Berríos is going to be Friday, which makes sense. And you feel lucky, slightly lucky, if you're
because he's good at home.
He's really good at home, so you get him one extra home start. So I don't know how much I buy into that narrative, whether it's a thing or it's just a weird coincidence. But Berríos will go, and then it's interesting because they have Ross Stripling, I believe, starting a rehab outing on Friday as well. So he will take some time to come back from that, but presumably if all goes well, he's going to be able to make his next start in the majors. So then you probably have to have one more start then from Mitch White in the interim of that. So I wonder what they'll do with the off day and the extra off day with that rain delay, if they rejig it at all, or if they just, I think that if there was a priority for them, it's probably matchups, but also maybe doing something so that Alec gets some rest. So maybe that benefits that a little bit in terms of he's obviously going to have an innings, well, he's over his innings, most innings or whatever pitched. So they'll probably want to be mindful of that. So if they can situate it such that he'll end up sort of getting less starts or an extra rest, then I think they'll do that. But otherwise, I don't know. I don't know that they'll be fiddling with their rotation that much. It will probably come when Ross Stripling is ready to come back. Then they'll have some real decisions to make.
Does the amount of innings that Manoa pitched start to concern you? I think he's sixth in the whole MLB and first in the AL East in terms of how much he's put on his workload so far. And he's a young guy. He's a grinder. He can battle through, or are you kind of on the idea of let's taper it back a bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that baseball teams and players are, like, everything is so advanced. And so they don't just look at innings total and it's like, this is too many. It's like, they're constantly evaluating the player. You know, players are always wearing all this different kind of tech to that tells them how exhausted they are. I don't even know how it works, but it obviously tells them all this information that is like, you know, how hard they're throwing, and if you know how hard they throw, and maybe they're tired because they're not throwing as hard, and all this kind of stuff. So they have so many different ways that they can evaluate the player now, and do so in a very sophisticated way. And then they're obviously just talking to Alec and understanding. So I think that he's a competitive guy. He's, you know, a guy that's in great shape. He's a young guy, as you said. So I think the team knew that he was probably going to be throwing the most innings he's ever thrown. They'll definitely be mindful of that. And I think that's why if they can sort of take opportunities where they skip a start for him, or they maneuver the rotation in such a way that he'll end up not pitching as much, or you know, not having to, or getting that extra rest, I think they'll do that. I'm not personally worried because I think that Alec is savvy enough of an athlete that he kind of knows, leave some in the tank a little bit for down the stretch. And I think he was even talking about that, you know, in spring training, knowing that it's really important to be at your best when it matters most. And so I'm personally not worried. And I think the Blue Jays probably have a good plan ahead that uses all the latest technology to tell them how to keep their pitchers, especially Alec, as sharp as possible.
So I know you briefly mentioned the Berríos obviously getting the start Friday and how that could be a positive. I just wonder why you think the road starts are just such a concern in terms of the splits. Like, he's much more dominant at home, and I'm sure there's a comfortability to being in your own routine, but it seems to affect him way more dramatically than anybody else.
Yeah, and so that's like one of those things where it's like, is there something here, or is it just a weird coincidence in the sense that maybe he's, I mean, I don't know, I can't list off the top of my head like all the ballparks that he's thrown in this year outside the Rogers Center, but are some of those ballparks not pitcher friendly? Did he get the short straw in terms of pitching in ballparks that aren't great for pitchers? Is it just the handful of starts where he was really bad? Like, I do remember one in Milwaukee where he was not good. I think there was one in Chicago where he really struggled. And so having really disastrous road starts will up that ERA, even if it's only a handful that were really, really bad, that still ups the ERA enough. Like, even his season, like, his CRA is still above 5, and he's had a lot of starts where he's actually looked really good, but because he's had so many that are like huge disaster starts, the ERA is just like very high, and it's been hard to come down because he has been still like up and down. So I haven't dug into the numbers enough to know. It might just be a weird coincidence of types of teams that he's played on the road don't match up against him, the ballparks that he's thrown in, and those few starts on the road where he was really, really bad, where it's like that is like your ERA of the game is like 36 or something like that because you didn't get out of like the second inning. And so those really skew it because you're obviously making less starts on the road, so you're only having like whatever he's had, like 12 or 13 or something. So those really bad ones can start to skew the numbers a little bit. But I would think that there shouldn't be much to it. I don't understand why a pitcher like wouldn't. And the Rogers Center, like, well, it's pretty neutral, but it would be no means like super pitcher friendly. So it doesn't really explain why he's really good at home, at like the actual environment of the home. So I don't know. It might just be one of those weird things.
I like this this question about, is it a stat or is there more to it? I got another one for you then. Our guy Ben Ennis tweeted this out yesterday. The Blue Jays record the last 2 years with George Springer, 97-70. Without George Springer, 54-51. Is that a bit shocking to you?
I think I knew that in the sense that, I think I remember looking that up last year when he was playing and realizing that they were a much better team. I mean, I think there's something to that. How much can one player be influential is up for debate, I think, but and again, like, I think you could probably parse through those numbers and be like, okay, what teams are they playing with George? What are they losing? Like, is the time of the schedule that he's been out, like, especially last year, he was out for most of the first part of the season. Who were they playing at that time and all that kind of stuff? So you could really dig into those numbers. But I think there's something to that in that, like, George is a really, really good player and he's impactful on the field. He plays center field. That's a prime position. He's also one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. In terms of doing damage, he obviously is right up there in terms of best leadoff hitters at hitting home runs of all time, because he's been doing it for so long. And he just is impactful in different ways, in the sense that he can get on base, he can take a walk, he can do damage, and it just changes the whole complexion of the lineup if you are facing George Springer at the top of it versus, and no disrespect, but if you're facing, like, well, Lourdes Gurriel has been really hot lately, but he's just a different type of hitter now. He's not doing as much, he's not hitting for as much power and doing as much damage. But also they've had other guys up there too, Biggio, Espinal, Tapia. Like, those guys can hit leadoff and they have different skill sets, but no one can do it like George can. And so he is a really impactful player, and he's just been in so many big scenarios that he's another guy that seems to deliver a lot when the game's on the line and when you want him to deliver the most. So I look at those numbers and I think there is something to it. They are a much better team with George Springer, and that's why they signed him. That's why they wanted him on the team, because he makes them better.
So did the addition of Jackie Bradley Jr. and obviously with Whit Merrifield, does that start to signal more of a concern for you on George Springer's long-term health, or just a good buffer?
Yeah, probably more so the latter. I mean, the thing with George's elbow is that, like, we sort of understand it, that it's really not going to get completely better, mm-hmm. Because it's been lingering for so long, and it's probably something that's going to have to be rectified in the off season, or just needs an extended break, and that's just not going to happen in season. So he was playing through it, because playing through it wasn't going to make it worse. But at some point, the Blue Jays sort of just decided, like, let's get it some rest. And I think a lot of the IL had to do with also getting that anti-inflammatory shot there to just really speed along that recovery of it, or help it along, or make it somewhat better. So I don't read too much into the Jackie Bradley Jr. I think this is also one of those instances where, like, the Blue Jays had always liked him. He always heard his name kind of rumored around the Blue Jays. And so it was also just an opportunity to try it out without the waiver deadline, trade mm-hmm. deadline that used to exist in August. Like, teams don't have any other opportunity to add to their team outside of those random like waiver claim type stuff, or like those when guys are released, they can sign them. So I think it was probably more so just like an opportunity to have a look at a guy, see what he can do for your team. And I'm sure that the Blue Jays are going to want to, like, get him in there a little bit and see what he can do for them, and then make a decision down the road when George comes back and how they want to construct their roster. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that with Whit Merrifield and whoever is that other center fielder, or if they keep all three in terms of Zimmer and Jackie Bradley Jr., I think that it signals that George is probably going to play less center field, or they're going to have ways in which he doesn't have to handle that load all on his own. But I mean, I think we'll see him back, and I don't think that this says that the injury will be extended. I think it just kind of gives them more protection in case he can't play as much center field.
And I do hear that Jackie Bradley Jr., good locker room guy, good vibes guy, and so he'll fit probably really well into this team. Okay, quickly before I let you go, I decided on the name of this question. Is just a number or a narrative? New segment. How much of a concern is it that the Jays are 29-38 against teams that are 500 or better?
Yeah, that is probably something that is concerning, because when they get to the postseason, or if they get to the postseason, they're only going to be playing teams 500 or better. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, you look at it and say, well, I mean, as long as they get to the postseason, it sort of doesn't matter, because if they get hot in the postseason, like, they'll be beating those teams, or they should be beating those teams. So on the one hand, like, that kind of stat doesn't really matter as long as it doesn't prevent them from getting to the postseason. I think we've seen other teams in the past, like, they wouldn't be the first team that gets to the postseason and has a record like that against teams above 500. Like, it's definitely happened before. But I think that it maybe just signals to you, like, does this team have what it takes? Like, I think it leaves you with that question, but it also is just a stat. It's just numbers, and it's just regular season. And as weird as it is, the baseball plays such a long regular season. They play all that just to get into the postseason. It's funny how it ends up sort of like not mattering that much, in the sense that it matters because it seeds you and it puts you in the position that you're going to be in the postseason. But all that stuff is erased once you get there, right? And if you go on a run, look at the Braves, right? Like, they certainly weren't a team that looked very dangerous for almost most of the regular season. They got it going at the end, and they got hot at the right time, and they end up winning the World Series. And so, again, like, that is best case scenario. I'm not saying the Blue Jays are going to be this year's Braves or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen, but you never know. But that's, like, the weird thing about the regular season, is that, like, you play it and you play so many games, and those games tell you what a team is. And so we can read into that stat and we can say, okay, like, maybe the Blue Jays, you know, aren't quite there with some of these teams, or why are they not able to beat these teams consistently? But also, if they get there and they start to go on a run, then no one's remembering that stat. It kind of like, well, it doesn't really matter, the same way that no one's really recalling that many stats about the Braves last year, because it's like, well, they won the World Series. What else is there to say about it?
It's true. It's a whole new season. Anything can happen. So maybe that's a bonus for the Blue Jays when we look at all these numbers or narratives that we're bouncing around. Caitlin, appreciate you coming on the show today. Enjoy a day without Blue Jays baseball and get back into it Friday. We're looking forward to reading all your articles at The Athletic.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. So it's Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic. Our new segment, Just a Number Narrative, copyright that. Don't you dare take it. Any other show that's listening, that's mine. Okay, the feel-good story of the day before we let you go. Vaughn Grissom, top Atlanta prospect. Incredible 24 hours for this kid. Finds out Tuesday, he's been called up to the majors. Noon Wednesday, he's en route to Fenway to make his debut. 9 p.m., flipping his bat as he watches his first big league homer soar over the Green Monster.
And now Grissom facing a left-handed pitcher, up for the third time in his big league debut. Swing, high fly ball, deep left field. Vaughn Grissom has homered over the monster.
Well, guys, I gotta say, the scouts, they know what they're talking about with the talent that we have in the minor leagues. I was watching him in batting practice. Let's take a look at his home run. I mean, that's a fastball up in the zone, and he flips the bat on his first home run. I mean, that's jumping on some heat right there. And then hit it out in the street. Look at, I love it.
Tears of joy for the entire Grissom family tonight.
Tears of joy. The kid hits a homer in his first game. That's an absolute incredible story. He says, my childhood dreams came true. I think you're going to react a lot easier and better, but then it happens, and I thought I was having a heart attack. He didn't. He crushed it out of the park. Can't wait to see what he continues to do. No Blue Jays tonight, as I mentioned, but NFL, baby, two games on. Also, the Field of Dreams game today. That's exciting. Cincinnati and the Cubs at 7:15. Going to be absolute incredible theater. The jerseys are elite. Obviously, there's a historic storyline behind this game. Looking forward to seeing that one. That's tonight. Two NFL games. Bianca's back in action as well. 7 o'clock, center court, home court for her. Fan of the show. Got the Ailish Hour bump the other day. She's riding two back-to-back victories. She's playing Zeng tonight. I think she's favored as well. So keep that momentum going, Bianca. No Canadians in action on the men's side today over Montreal. So you can just focus all your attention on Bianca tonight. Special shout out to Caitlin McGrath and Aaron Schatz for joining the show today. You can download the Fan Morning Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's Baby Friday. We'll be back tomorrow with the great vibes. Appreciate you all for listening. Have a great day.